toward you because you are
a Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special, and I'm so glad you're mine.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم. Dear ladies from all around the world, welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite Muslim lady. Well, this is Asma. You're listening to Arab English Radio, and I'm honored to be your host. Here with us, we have Brother Mustafa, who is going to help us know more about issues related to Muslim ladies.
Right.
Assalamu alaikum, brother, and welcome.
Wa alaikum assalam. Thank you for having me. Really happy to be here to speak about, you know, these topics. Definitely, it's, you know, a bit of a surprise or a shock to be invited to talk about this topic, considering I'm a man. However, I am studying psychology in the Hawza. You know, I'm married with kids, so I have a lot of experience, I would say, that I can hopefully share and give maybe an insight or perspective from the outside.
Exactly, right? Yeah. Yes, thank you. And it's not always women who are talking about women. Sometimes men must have to talk about women as well in order to just make sure that everybody knows already about the issues related to women. So as in here, the focus is on ladies, and the brother is going to help us know of the role of mothers and the role of ladies in the family from a natural perspective, like as in a psychological perspective as well.
I mean, we know that how much emphasis Islam has placed on the role of a mother, and we'll discuss that as well. But I thought it would be good to talk about, you know, just from a natural point of view, from nature's point of view, or from biological or psychological point of views, the critical role that a woman plays as a mother, right? For example, we see in nature that even in animals, we see that even in animals, the mother is like the main caretaker of the children, right?
Yeah.
It's rare to see, I'm not saying there aren't any animals where the father plays a huge role, but typically, in the majority of cases, you'll see that a mother is protective of his child, right? You'll see that in birds, you'll see that in all sort of species.
Yeah.
And that's because we are part of this world, right? We're sharing this world on a physical plane with all of creation, right? So the mother has probably the most significant role in moving, you know, society forward, in moving us forward in this sort of protection of children.
Exactly.
I would go as far as saying there's really no substitute even for the mother, right? Not in nature or not in human beings.
Would
you agree to that?
And from the psychological perspective also, we can understand that there are a lot of notions and ideas that tell you that if a mother is lost from a child's life, a lot of traumas are going to happen.
Definitely. And from a psychological point of view, the mother helps shape a child's personality.
Exactly.
Right? Way more than probably the father or any other factor that's out there. Even from the point of view when the child is inside the mother's womb, right?
Yeah.
The type of things that the mother eats, for example, the type of activities that she does.
And the type of feelings she has at that moment.
The type of emotions that the mother is feeling, they all have an impact on that child, even before the child is born, right? So, for example, we're told that, you know, when a woman is pregnant, she shouldn't be feeling stress.
Right? Exactly.
If she feels stress, it puts stress on the baby, right? It can cause, if there's like a high amount of stress, it can cause even, let's say, miscarriages in women,
right? Exactly, yeah.
So all of these things point towards the fact that just the biological, physical role that a mother plays is critical, right? Then when you see when a child is born, from the very first day, the child's personality starts taking form, right? One of the, for example, key things that can't be substituted is, for example, the mother's milk. There's so many studies which show that, you know, that has an impact on the child's IQ. You know, children that have had been fed by them from the mother's milk, they have higher IQs. They have, like, you know, more, their personality is, for example, better than children that haven't had that. So a lot of times people will substitute that for, let's say, you know, formulated milk or other type of milk. But they are not substitutes for example, a mother's milk. In the same way, there's so many other areas that you cannot find a substitute for a mother. It's unfortunate that in today's society, I would say, that role has become much less, right? People maybe don't either realize the importance of that role.
Exactly. Yeah. Speaking of the part that you mentioned, that mothers are so important, and we were just looking at it from a natural perspective, I just remembered that even naturally, this has been put in mother's heart to be the caretaker, the one who's going to share emotions excessively and with no expectations for the rewards. She's doing that with full of her heart, and this is something that has been put into her intuitively. So at this point, we go for a short break, and then we will be back. Thank you for staying with us. Welcome back. Well, this is Muslim Lady, and we're talking about the role of women from a psychological and natural perspective.
I would like to maybe now then go more into, now that we've sort of established the base.
Yeah, you know, the introduction is done.
Yeah, the base, you know, that there's no substitute. There's nothing, you know, that you can replace a mother with. We can then really talk about from an Islamic point of view as well. And I think It's actually very, very logical as well. Once you start seeing how Islam presents, you know, mothers and the emphasis that it places on mothers. For example, I was reading like Imam Khomeini, for example, you know, he talks about how a perfect human being is someone who manifests God's attributes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And another article, someone then, you know, related to that, they wrote that a mother can teach a child God's attributes. Right?
Yeah.
For example, when a mother is loving and, you know, she's showing positive emotions to a child, even when they make mistakes, who does a child go to for security, right?
They go to their mother,
right? So they'll learn, for example, forgiveness. They'll learn patience from mother. And these are all God's attributes.
Yeah, exactly.
So
we always had this comparison between mother's affection and God's affection.
Yes. Yeah, in fact, we have narrations which say, you know, God's like love towards human beings is like 70 times greater than a mother's.
Exactly.
So you're seeing, you know, normally we don't necessarily compare God to like human beings, right? Which again shows you the emphasis that, yeah, that's being placed here, right? So it's not just about like the personality from a psychological point of view. We're actually talking about like the spirit here. The soul
exactly
relies on, you know, very much how a mother is.
The touch of a mother and the characteristics of the children, which is, as you just mentioned, you cannot replace it with anything
right.
else. Nobody can do that. Just a mother can do
right.
it.
You know, we have other narrations which say a mother is better than, for example, 100 teachers, right?
Exactly.
So even before the child goes to school, you know, they learn how to speak. They learn how to sort of all the behaviors that they learn, it's coming from the mom. That's really, really important to talk about. Now, if you think about it, it's not just, you know, we're not just talking about a family. We're really talking about society here, right? When that child goes into the world, we want them to be responsible citizens, right? And again, that's something that, from a psychological point of view, a child's personality is actually formed by the age of 7, 8, or 9.
Exactly.
And that's what a lot of psychologists say. Where is that going to come from, right? Is that going to come from, if the mother, like, lets go of her responsibilities, then the child is going to start learning things from, let's say, television. They're going to learn from other sources, right?
Yeah.
We're saying that the role that a mother plays, you know, you can't substitute it with like the mobile
phone. It's irreplaceable. Actually,
yeah.
Its parents' role is very great on the children's growth. But then the focus is on mothers because, as you just mentioned, whenever we have a problem, whenever there's a thing, the first person we'd go to is the mother.
Right. And exactly. Right. And from a spiritual point of view, you know, we're told that the prophet, for example, once he came home, you know, to Hazrat Fatima's home, and he saw that she was feeding, you know, one of her childs at one time. She was also like cooking at the same time. So the Prophet, you know, he didn't like end up going and helping her. He gave her an advice, and he said that, you know, Fatima, you know, my daughter, you are created for the next life. You're not made for this world. And, you know, the bitterness that you're having to experience right now, the difficulty that you're having to experience right now, you're going to be rewarded for that in the hereafter. And, you know, in reply to that, she actually thanked God for that opportunity. So we know that, you know, the role of a mother, as important as it is, it's also very difficult.
Also, we have it from Imam Khomeini, who said that it's from a mother's lap that a man can go to the skies.
Right. Or on a similar note, you know, it's very famous that heaven lies in the mother's feet. Right?
Yeah.
So when we talk about the mother's role, you know, if she doesn't play that kind of like, doesn't bring about the spirituality in the home, or she doesn't emphasize, for example, life in the next world, we'll see that those children will grow up without, for example, mm-hmm. spirituality. They'll grow up without having a good vision about their life.
Exactly.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
At the very first part, we said that the role of a mother, as it is to be a mother, the notion of a mother, has been put in the heart of a mother as a burden on her shoulder, because she naturally, as we just mentioned, naturally it has been put on her to be the mother,
yes.
to be responsible for that great burden. The mother is the teacher, the natural teacher to the children. And then she's not only developing that child, she's not only helping that child to be developed, but also she is helping an individual to be prepared to get into society.
Yep.
So she, whatever the role of a mother has at in the house is going to be applicable to the society,
yep.
because she's preparing those individuals.
Yeah. To give you an example, let's say like if God forbid a mother is like complaining all the time, or she's depressed, you know, a child will not feel secure at home. You know, my teachers say that child will then seek comfort, for example, in sinful activities, right? If
yeah.
they're not getting that comfort and love from their home and you know, from the mother. And so obviously here the father also plays a role, obviously,
yeah.
you know.
But mothers, since we're talking to Muslim
yeah,
ladies, mothers are just the hearth in the house.
Right.
Like they are the part, the thing that gives warmth to any house. Like the role of father is important as well. But mothers are the thing that are going to share that spirit with the
right.
family members.
Well, that reminds me of, you know, a very famous tradition where we're told a person came and he asked the Prophet, who should I be good to, for example, you know, and he said, your mother. And then he said,
yeah.
who should I be good to? And he, you know, the Prophet repeated this three times. He said, the mother. And then he said, the father. One thing we have to keep in mind is that as much as you want to be loving towards the child, the mother also has to allow the child to have some suffering in their life, right?
Mm-hmm.
To give them, for example, responsibilities of the home. Sometimes what we see is that the parents are doing everything for the child.
Yeah, they spoil the children, actually.
Right, right. The child has to also experience some suffering at the same time.
To be prepared for the coming problems
exactly,
and suffering.
For the realities of this world, right?
Yeah.
There's so much that can be said about this role, but you know, there's no replacement for it. You know, if the mother doesn't play her role well, then not only does the child suffer, the family suffers, society suffers, like the whole future of that person is being decided by this individual.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And also previously on Muslim Ladies, we've been talking about the fact that since we're talking about mothers and the focus is on the Muslim lady, we know that in order to be a good mother, you have to go through a lot of education. You have, as a girl, you have to educate yourself that your future is going to be to share that role of being a mother. And for that, you have to prepare yourself. How to prepare yourself? You have to educate yourself. You have to know more. A perfect girl who's been educating herself all the time, has been trying on her personality, who's been working on so many other factors, is going to be a perfect mother, a perfect Muslim mother who's going to just nurture kids that are going to share an important role in society. Thank you, brother, and thank you, dear ladies, for staying with us until another episode. I just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters, and welcome to the program Keys of Life. This program is based on a very popular book, Mafatihul Hayat, by Ayatollah Javad Amili. And it's really, really an amazing book, which does give you the keys to life. In previous episodes, we've been talking about, you know, one of the main topics has been how we should be with our fellow believers, right? How we should be interacting with our fellow believers. Previously, we've talked about, for example, providing physical support to believers, you know, being there for them from a physical point of view, providing them clothes, money, and all of that type of stuff. Today, we're going to jump into, I would say, for me, when I read this, it was incredible. And you'll see why. Before I get into the topic is really about providing emotional support to fellow believers. And the reason why it was really, really amazing for me, it's because I'm studying psychology, right? And when I was reading this, the statements of the Prophet, the Imams, of how we can provide emotional support for our fellow believers, you know, it made me realize that, you know, these people didn't go to any university, they didn't get any degrees, you know, they didn't do any researches, they didn't read, like, you know, heavy psychology books by different psychologists, yet the advice that they're providing, right, their sayings, it's full of stuff that researchers are trying to figure out today, right? For example, if you want to learn about how to be, you know, a more social person, there's so many books written about this stuff. And it's based on research by doctors and people that went to university. Whereas these keys that we're providing, these keys to life, the Imams were providing these to us more than 1,000 years ago. Right? So it truly shows that this information, this advice, in my view, is truly, truly divine, and it can help shape a better society and, you know, just our relationship with others. So let me get into the topic. You know, we're talking about emotional support, how a believer should be with another believer. And one of the things that's recommended is that a believer provides emotional support to his fellow believer. So we have, for example, one of the sayings that we have, you know, to start off with is from the Prophet. And he said that, you know, whoever makes a believer happy has made me happy. And whoever's made me happy has made God happy. So this, you know, just providing happiness to another believer is a very, very important thing. It's a way, for example, for us to even connect to God, right? Sometimes we're thinking, what can we do? What, you know, what dua or what supplication, what prayer can we recite so that we can make God happy? you know, it's actually quite simple. You don't really have to find some kind of, you know, secret zikr or reminder. You don't have to go and necessarily read, you know, 1,000 times. Although I would say you should do those things if you want to. But from a social point of view, God is saying, you know, if you make a fellow believer happy, you've made him happy, right? In addition to that, then, you know, we have the sixth imam who after this, you know, explaining this statement, he went on to also explain that when you do make a fellow believer happy, when you die in your grave, you know, a person will appear, and this person will be the manifestation of that help that you provided to that person, and they will now be a source of happiness. They will protect you from sort of all of the fearful things that may happen once a person dies. So we have to go for a short break, and then I will come back and continue on this topic.
Ayatollah Javadi Amiri, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
So coming back from the break, we're talking about how a believer can provide emotional support to a fellow believer, to a fellow Muslim. And in other, you know, I really do like these sayings. You know, I think I do want to like talk about different sayings from the Prophet and the Imams, because they show they have really, really high values here. For example, the Prophet once said, you know, honoring a believer brings about God's mercy upon that person. Or Imam Ali said, you know, honoring a believer is as if you're honoring God. And then he went on to say, you cannot imagine the reward that God will give you for honoring him. So honoring a believer, being happy towards them, you know, all of these values are being emphasized. Another very, very beautiful narration here in this book from the fourth Imam, Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, and he says, you know, love your Muslim brother and like for him what you like for yourself. What you don't like for yourself, don't like for him. What you dislike for yourself, cherish him. You know, cherish your fellow believer because he is from you and you are from him. This is something that I probably heard the first time, you know, while reading this book, that a fellow believer is being equated, you know, they're being given equal value to yourself. So this is something that you won't find many times in other ideologies. It's not something you're going to find in those social psychology books. These are values that are divine from God and the prophets. In another place, you know, once a man came to the prophet to ask for advice, and the prophet said, you know, meet your fellow brother, you know, with a happy face. You know, and then he also went on to say that God does not like the one who is bitter in front of his brother, the one who is unhappy. So that's another, I think, important part of our life, that with our friends, with our fellow believers, you know, we should be positive. We should be happy. because that will provide sort of like, you know, positive feelings in our brothers. And that provides emotional support. I'm sure we can all think of someone that we've had in our life, you know, a friend who was, you know, always complaining, you know, or they were very negative. If you think about how they made you feel, they probably didn't make you feel very good, right? The Prophet here is saying, you know, for a fellow believer, you should be making them feel good. You shouldn't always be complaining and you shouldn't be bitter. Similarly, you know, we have advice, for example, about visiting the sick. Something that interesting that came up here was even the idea of writing letters. You know, one of the imams said, you know, if you're traveling, then write letters to your friends, to your fellow brothers. Today, thankfully, you know, we have means like, you know, our phones and emails and WhatsApp and all of that. So we don't necessarily have to sit down and write letters, but we should stay in touch with our fellow brothers and sisters around the world, people that we know, our friends that might be living in other countries and other cities, even when we're traveling. That's another great piece of advice, right? Another sort of component, you know, of emotional support is that many times, you know, today friendship is, for example, defined in a way that, you know, friendship equals favors, right? You make friends because they do favors for you and you do favors for them. Whereas the imams are emphasizing, the Prophet is emphasizing, hey, you know, in a saying that don't get angry if your request or demand from your friend, if they're not able to like fulfill it, if they're not able to do what you're asking them to do, you know, be forgiving towards them, be kind towards them. And if they apologize, you know, that they're not able to meet your needs, then you should accept their apology. So that's all the time we have for today's episode. And inshallah, we'll continue on this topic of emotional support and how to be with a believer in our next episode.
Driving past, walking fast, to the field of dreams, hear the children's screams.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
Yani.
Bazaar.
The construction industry has continuously had a series of revolutions throughout history. Technological advancements have influenced the construction sector too, from durable concrete in ancient structures to smart windows that automatically open and close based on light exposure. Some materials evolved with time, others are new to the industry and address natural disasters while reflecting changing lifestyles and environmental values. Still, other materials are born out of a need to reduce construction costs. In a nutshell, structures and their materials are the building blocks of society and economic expansion.
Hello everyone, Ali Reza here, welcoming you to a brand new edition of Bazaar. This week, we are taking you on a journey through Iran's mammoth building construction industry while highlighting some of the country's recent developments in this sector. Plus, we will check out its market as a whole and the construction industry's contributions to the national economy. So, let's get started.
To understand the enormity of the construction industry, we visited the 22nd Annual International Building and Construction Exhibition in Tehran. Because the exhibition was sprawled over nearly 4 hectares of land, one day is not nearly enough for visitors to see the entire expo, so it ran for 3 days. This exhibition is one of the most important events in its industry. We caught up with a few companies at the exhibit to see what they were offering. Our first stop was at a booth held by a company that makes ceramic tiles. They also export their products to numerous countries. Next, we stopped by a company specializing in manufacturing faucets and kitchen and bathroom attachments. It also purchases most of its raw materials from inside the country. Like many we have seen at the event, this company has created many job opportunities directly and indirectly. Plus, it uses the latest machinery to make high-quality products that compete with foreign brands. Now, many might not think twice about it, but Iran's faucet and fixture production have been booming. So we spoke with another company that has been exporting these items for years.
Industry participants say this year's Building Expo was much larger than last year's, meaning that Iran's construction industry has expanded in recent years, displaying the country's various existing and emerging capabilities in the field. Statistics show that last year some 900 domestic companies participated in the event. Also, foreign companies were present, offering their goods and services.
This year's exhibit hosted hundreds of foreign companies from Germany, Australia, Turkey, China, Spain, Italy, South Korea, and Malaysia, just to name a few. A wealth of products were showcased at the expo, from road and construction equipment to stones, sanitary supplies, heating and cooling systems, lifts and elevators, and so much more. Rarely has any industry offered so much versatility and variety of products as the construction industry. Events like this one offer a platform for the exchange of ideas, examining markets and opportunities for collaboration to create new products needed in the market. Next, we stopped by a display for a company specializing in making various inset kitchen products. We asked them about their goods and approach to challenges posed by the US sanctions. Walking through the exhibit, we ran into a company that makes metal fittings for stairs, windows, and areas that require spatial separations.
All things considered, the construction sector has been significant for the Iranian economy. The sector is divided into two main parts: government infrastructure projects and the housing industry. The construction industry has been thriving due to national and international investment to the extent that it is now one of the largest in the West Asia region.
This sector suffered a lot after the US withdrew from the 2015 deal and reimposed sanctions against Iran. These measures choked construction materials imports. As a result, the steady flow of things like metals to Iran was seriously hampered and eventually halted altogether. But despite the bans, this industry continues to grow and is also one of the few that exports services to other countries. Based on the Association of Iranian Exports of Technical and Engineering Services, Iran currently has the potential to export engineering services worth $40 billion annually. The country already exports these services to countries around the Caspian Sea, its bordering neighbors, South and Central America, North Africa, and South Asia. Some construction projects include sewage treatment plants, dams, and energy plants. According to the Ministry of Industry, Mining, and Trade, Iran is self-sufficient in construction material production. Steel, glass, and cement are abundantly produced in the country. Moreover, the surplus of these items is exported to countries worldwide. Government officials say they have plans to expand exports to Iran's trade partners, including China and Russia. For example, the Ministry of Industry, Mine and Trade says it plans to sell upwards of $3 billion worth of construction materials to Russia alone. As a whole, the government views the construction sector as a feasible alternative for generating foreign revenues and diversifying the country's economy away from oil profits.
All right, now it's time to check out this week's special feature of Bazaar. So let's see where Sarah has been this past week.
In an ever-increasing technology-driven world, city streets are becoming more and more congested than ever before, while connected and autonomous technologies in vehicles are also on the rise. Such safety concerns pose a significant challenge for city planners and traffic engineers to improve mobility, safety, and efficient use of roadways now and in the future. When you are driving to work, or especially going on a road trip, you need to be fully alert to avoid the hidden cameras all across the road from catching you or costing you a damage. Well, sometimes this can be really irritating, but have you ever thought of the significant impacts they have in the most challenging situations? Today, we decided to take you to a company active in the field of intelligent transportation system in Sharif University of Technology. Let's go check it out. With creating intelligent transportation systems, the research and development team of the students in Sharif University of Technology has created a smart traffic software for processing related information. These smart systems are mounted beside or over the roads to detect motoring offenses, including speeding, vehicles going through a red traffic light, vehicles going through a toll booth without paying, or for recording vehicles inside a congestion charge area. All these violations are detected 24/7 using traffic data analysis system.
We as Kane Group started to work around 10 years ago here in Electronic Research Institute in Sharif University of Technology. Back then, our main expertise was focused on image processing and embedded systems and also IoT devices for smart cities and buildings. Our products are all knowledge-based and divide into three main categories. The first one is machine vision and embedded systems. The other part of the products are based on IoT or Internet of Things products. And the third one is the big data analysis and data mining. These products are all implemented on a secure and highly customized Linux operating system. Another line of our products are based on IoT devices, such as the smart gateways and actuators. We have exported these products to two foreign countries, and also the third line of our products are based on data mining and big data analysis. These softwares and products are mainly used in road maintenance and transportation organization and also some major municipality offices. These softwares help a lot in extracting useful patterns out of millions and billions data in traffic control centers and help managers and also managers and experts in traffic control sensors to extract practical and beneficial data from these smart cameras or sensors throughout the city.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, this intelligent software was created for the smart camera system. When it comes to cameras, we have various kinds of traffic enforcement cameras, such as speed violation detection camera, red light camera, road safety camera, and so many more for plate detection. But that's not all. This company also creates IoT devices or Internet of Things. These are intelligent gateway camera systems for buildings and image processing with the aim of providing a better living environment for people and reducing energy consumption. All right, now it's time to take a closer look at the smart camera system and see how it works.
There are thousands of smart camera systems all across the country that actually function with the software created in this company. Now, let's take a look at one of the smart camera systems created in this company. Well, just like human, this smart system is created and is made of eyes. And if we delve inside, it's also made of a powerful brain. Well, the eye of this system is the industrial camera, which is
created in different versions depending on the geographic location of the camera. For example, the one we have here has been created with a hardware design that protects against a heat wave. Anyway, this camera captures the images from the front side of this smart system and sends these images to the processing board, which functions as the brain part of this smart system. And finally, the data is transmitted from the intelligent software of the smart system to the traffic control centers all across the city.
The Connect Group was founded in some 8 years ago, I think. And the main focus of the group was on smart cutting-edge smart technologies, for example, in machine vision, machine learning, artificial intelligence, data analytics, Internet of Things, and stuff like that. Later on, we used these technologies in more specific areas, for example, in intelligent transportation systems and various aspects of smart cities, like smart buildings, smart automation, and we have other countries around us that they are interested in some of our products. Our main goal for the future is to actually connect all the intelligent aspects of the city together. For example, if you have something smart in the in a villa or in an apartment, we connect it to the road, we connect it to the work office, and all these things all together to for one brain actually to decide for the optimization and improvement of several aspects of the these systems.
Employing the latest smart technologies as well as artificial intelligence, this company focuses on smart city and smart buildings, and ultimately it aims at city management without human involvement. Presently, their products are available in almost 17 provinces in Iran. Traffic technologies continue to evolve and scale into solutions in mega cities. Finally, this paves the way to optimizing traffic flow and improving efficiency and safety on the roads. Well, there is no way to violate the traffic rules. The latest technologies in the modern world today, including the smart camera system, can detect and improve the wrong behaviors of drivers in the society. And by the end of the day, they can create a smarter, safer, and more sustainable transportation ecosystem. I've been Sarah Dema, and I'll see you next time.
We are getting close to the end of the program, but before we go, let's check out some news and trends in the construction industry and beyond. Iran is known for its creative experts in the field of engineering, so it is no surprise that last year the country exported technical and engineering services valued at nearly $2 billion.
That's based on Iran's Trade Promotion Organization. These services were sent to countries in Southeast Asia, North Africa, and neighboring regions. For example, 57 major infrastructural projects were carried out by dozens of Iranian companies in Iraq alone. Furthermore, the organization says with more planning and resources, the country can quickly increase exports of technical and engineering services to $20 million annually. In the last 15 years, Iran has taken on some 900 construction projects in 21 countries worth $32 billion.
Unconventional use of construction material. An Iranian architect has transformed a widely used construction material into a unique form of window. It is a type of spectacled brick that is a solid block with a circular aperture at its core which filters in the light.
The architect says the high density of buildings and city regulations in Tehran has limited sunlight exposure in office and commercial buildings. The developer explains the special brick in this project allows sunlight penetration even in parts of the building where windows are not permitted by city codes. Additionally, these unique windows can be adjusted to closed or open positions to optimize daylight exposure. The advantage of this brick is that it can absorb less air pollution and help filter out the noise from the motorways. Increasing market reach. And let's conclude with Iran's efforts to expand its market reach and trade of goods with its neighbors. The country is organizing 6 exhibitions in the Qatari capital, Doha, that will be held during this year's FIFA World Cup event. 5 exhibitions will introduce Iranian handcrafts, such as hand-woven carpets, home decorations, and much more. Additionally, 1 will be held for construction materials and technical engineering services. This is significant for increasing bilateral relations and trade between the two nations. Government officials also say a direct shipping line has been launched between Iran and Qatar to help with the transportation and distribution of goods. That wraps up our program for today. Also, if you have a topic that you're interested in, you can send us your thoughts and suggestions via email. We always enjoy hearing from you. On behalf of the entire team, thank you for tuning in and take care. And bye-bye.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio, in which we try to ask and answer some of the questions related to the Islamic laws based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. But before we embark on our episode, let's take a listen to a short biography. A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtaza Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, we testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up till 1347, he was actively participating in Bahth al-Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahth al-Kharij, he started Bahth al-Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, my guest speaker as always. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to business according to the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Well, Sheikh Javid, what's the general view, or what is the general Islamic law on selling, buying, and wearing foreign clothes?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, foreign clothes are available, as we can see, on the Muslim market. They are found everywhere. And that quite suggests that there is no problem in importing, selling, buying, and using such clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes the Muslim community, or Muslims generally speaking, cannot produce such things, or they are dependent on imports, importing such goods from non-Muslim countries. So it is basically, and generally speaking, of course, quite permissible, and there is no objection to someone doing this, for example, wearing clothes or importing clothes. And of course, we do know very well that Muslims have give and take relationship with non-Muslim countries. For example, there are some Muslim countries that are importing goods from China. They include clothes, they include garments, and different things. So they also export their own products to those same countries. It is in the interest of the Muslim countries to, for example, to engage in a kind of transaction or a kind of business with other Muslim, with non-Muslim countries. Sometimes it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, generally speaking, it's permissible. There's no objection to importing, selling, buying, and using such clothes.
Right.
But it's not permissible to import, sell, buy, and wear those clothes which would constitute a kind of, let's say, affront to Islamic decency or morals, which actually goes against the Islamic decency and morality.
Mm-hmm.
And they are clothes which are offensive in common view. They are clothes which are, you can call them,
you mean like the see-through, for example?
Yeah,
clothes?
Transparent. There, you can say you sometimes I see, for example, myself, trousers, they are very ugly patterns.
Yeah.
there are holes and they are very disgusting. And they are against Islamic culture. It's against
beneath Muslim actually to wear them.
It is, yeah, of course, it's degrading for Muslims to wear such trousers. So these kind of clothing should not be imported and should not be worn by Muslims. And no one should actually advertise them, okay? Because it's a kind of, let's say, promoting Western culture. If we call it a Western culture,
mm-hmm.
because even some Western, some people in the West who are not Muslims, they consider such...
They abhor it.
Yeah. They consider such kinds of clothes very much
offensive. Yes.
So it's not good to wear them, it's not permissible to wear them, promote them. even if it's considered or not considered promoting Western culture.
Mm. Shashavit, since you talked about the clothes, you know, let me ask a quite related question here. Some of the clothes, in fact, hold or have the picture of celebrities. Let's say portraits of some celebrities, and you know, not like in indecency. I mean, like only the portrait of their like heads and stuff like that, right? So is it permissible for example, men to wear clothes, you know, having the portrait of female celebrities, or the other way around?
Well, it's not permissible to wear such clothes, because when you wear such clothes with pictures of celebrities, that means that you are trying to uphold the values and the, you know, the things they stand for, you know. You're not going to say that, you're not going to say that, okay, whatever values and principles they uphold, you're going to uphold, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You're not, yes. But when you wear such clothing, that directly or indirectly suggests that you are actually standing for them, you support them, you love them, you care for them, and you just uphold whatever they uphold.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case. And we should not actually advertise them. We should not wear those clothes with such pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that is for sure.
I see. Okay, thank you very much. So let's take a short break, and we'll be back and continue our program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Mama Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to business according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Sheikh Javid, in the previous section of this episode, you talked about some of the jurisprudential laws related to selling, buying, and wearing foreign clothes. And we talked about, some offensive clothes, right, that should not be imported or traded with, in fact, by Muslims. Well, what's the general law about emulating Western hairstyles then?
Well, the general criterion for emulating Western hairstyle and for it being haram is to simulate the enemies of Islam, to make yourself look like the enemies of Islam, to dress yourself in a way which portrays you as a non-Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if there is one such hairstyle, you know, because I suppose the hairstyle is increasingly becoming, you know, the Western hairstyle is becoming very popular, and some of the hairstyles are very offensive. If a specific hairstyle makes you or puts you in a category of people, making you look like the enemies of Islam, and then it helps promote the Western culture, then that is absolutely forbidden. So, but this actually varies according to the different countries, according to the times, according to the people, and it's not, as I said, it's the hairstyle is not connected to the West. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's called hairstyle,
mm-hmm.
but it depends from one situation to another situation. Mm-hmm. So generally speaking, it's not permissible to make yourself look like an enemy of Islam or to simulate the enemies of Islam.
Shetovi, let's talk about this issue, which is somehow seen on the societal level. Like, for example, in educational settings.